Thank you for listening to the Oasis Church podcast. To find out more about Oasis, including service times and directions, please visit our website at oasisla.org.
Well, Philip and I have been married for 28 years, and most of them, yay! and most of them have been good. But there were moments, I'm just saying, there were moments when I wondered if we would actually make it another year. And dealing with our differences was probably the biggest challenge that we had, because we're different. And the truth is, we'll never be anything other than who we are. As amazing as he is, he will only ever be a better version of him. And as I grow, I'll only be a better version of me. We'll never be different people. And so we've had to learn to handle the differences. I've talked to hundreds of couples over the years, and there hasn't been one couple who at one point in their relationship did not say, "We're just too different. We have irreconcilable differences." Well, duh, we all have differences. I'm just saying, you wouldn't have been attracted to someone who wasn't different than you. And see, I think God looks down and goes, "Ha ha, this is gonna be fun. Y'all work that out." See, marriage is a lifelong process of learning to not just tolerate the differences, but learning to love them. When I've asked couples who have been married under 15 years what they would change about their spouse, they usually have this long list of things that they would change. And then I've asked couples who have been married longer than 40 years, and I've asked them, I said, "What would you change about your spouse?" And you know what they say? Nothing. They would change nothing. The same question, and they wouldn't change anything. Well, what happened? I think they just learned to work through it a little bit, and they realized that actually where we're different is what makes us stronger. Now, when we're dating, we might notice the differences, but we don't actually see that those differences could ever be a challenge. Because see, we're in love. And when you're in that in love state, you're brain dead. Like, it's not actually working. Okay, so it's when reality just isn't within reach. I mean, this is the time when each of us do whatever the other one wants to do. You know, men watch all sorts of chick flicks and, you know, flowers. It's like a regular thing. And this is when, you know, women, this will go to every sporting event because it's whatever you want to do. No, whatever you want to do. And this is awesome. And it lasts generally about 2 years, right? This state. Now, mature love is what you do when those exciting, euphoric feelings aren't there. And really, for a marriage to work, you have to grow from that brain dead, the cloud floated in romantic love to actually a love that you choose, to mature love, the strong love. And if we don't make that decision, then all of a sudden when those feelings aren't there anymore, then we leave or we withdraw, you know, get a divorce, hope to find that feeling again. I knew this woman who was in the middle of divorce from, you know, husband number one. And she had been married to him for about a year, and they had dated about a year before that. So, you know, that exciting, kind of heart-fluttering feelings, they just weren't there anymore. And so she just wanted out because she wanted those feelings. She wasn't willing to go to a seminar. She wasn't really willing to read books. She wasn't willing to talk to a counselor. She wasn't really willing to help build the real love. So she was just on to the next relationship. And she found a new man that found this new guy, and all of those exciting feelings were there. So, gosh, it must have been the right thing to do. But the sad thing is that she thought that this relationship was going to turn out differently than the other one. Well, it didn't. And after a year or so, she just didn't have those feelings anymore. Are you getting the picture? This cycle could go on forever and ever until she's willing to take the journey of real love. And so part of this journey is learning to manage where you're different and to let those differences bring out strengths in the relationship. 1 Corinthians 12 says this, says the body is a unit, though it's made up of many parts, and though all of its parts are many, they form one body. So it is with Christ. So basically, the marriage is a unit. It's made up of two parts, and those two parts form one, and they're different. And sometimes, rather than embracing where we're different, we reject where we're different. We spend time trying to change the other. For so long, I kept thinking, you know, Philip would just really become like me. Then he'd be perfect, like practically perfect in every way. And how amazing would that relationship be? So I was rejecting who he was and kept thinking. And I didn't always say that because I can be sweet, you know, a lot of times. But inside I was thinking that. If he would just change. There's a man named Carl Rogers, and he said it like this. He said, when I walk onto the beach to watch the sunset, I don't call out, you know, a little more orange over there, please. A little more purple in the back. No. He says, I enjoy the always different sunsets just like they are. So I'm thinking we could actually really learn to do that with each other. So what are some of the differences that we have to learn to deal with? Well, obviously, gender differences. We are different simply because we are male and female. And that goes beyond the plumbing, really. There's a couple of biological facts that just illustrate where we're different. You know, if you paid any attention in biology class, you might have learned some of these things. But I learned in biology class that a man's skull is almost always thicker and stronger than a woman's. No, really. They are thick-headed. It's just that they are. And this man named Dr. Michael Connor, he said it like this. He said, a man's thick-headedness and other anatomical differences have been associated with a uniquely male attraction to high-speed activities and reckless behavior that usually involve collisions with other males or automobiles. And it's genetic. I mean, come on, men invented the game of chicken, not women. Right? You know, because men and a number of other male, you know, species of animals seem to charge and crash into each other a lot. Like, that's fun to do. It's just, they're men. It's what they do. And then I learned this. I learned that the preoptic part of the thalamus is bigger in men, and that's basically the, you know, the optic nerve part. And so they're more captured by what they see. Doesn't make them wrong. Means they're more captured by what they see. So for example, they see this really exciting, you know, motorcycle go down the street. They're like, whoa, that's amazing. And women go, it's like rubber and metal. Like, what's the big deal? Right? We just don't even think like that. And there are two sides to our brain. Like, there's, you know, the left and the right side of the brain. And these sides are connected by something called the corpus callosum, which is this thick bundle of nerves. And in the brains of women, there are four times as many neurons connecting the right and the left sides. So because of that, there's more crosstalk between the left and the right brains in women. And this will produce some differences. And, you know, some are just interesting and some will drive you nuts, really. For example, women generally listen equally with both ears, while men tend to favor one or the other. Now, that's not going to save your marriage. That's just random trivia. Okay? And then women can focus on more than one problem at a time. And frequently, we prefer to solve problems through multiple activities at a time, which is why generally we're better at multitasking. Men try to. It doesn't really work. Generally, women are, because we can do more of that crosstalking in our brain. And so men and women, you know, they perceive the world in subtly different ways. Men excel at rotating, you know, three-dimensional objects in their head, which is why most of them are better at reading a map. And generally, women have to turn the map in the direction we want to go. You know what I'm talking about. All right. So, yeah, he can read a map, but can he find his socks? I'm just saying. See, and then women, you know, we generally tend to talk more. This is probably not news to you. But, you know, men talk primarily to convey information. But women, we talk to figure out what it is we really want to say. Right? We process it out loud. And then we also talk to create intimacy. Words for us create intimacy. So let her talk, honey. Let her talk. So talking. Now, men, what would be helpful is if you would get great at listening. Now, I don't know if you've ever watched a conversation between women, but they do something called active listening. So when one of them's talking, the other one is saying, oh, really? No way. Uh-uh. All that. So there's like active engagement happening. Okay? So what would let us know that you're really listening to us is if you put the remote control down. You know, you turn your phone over so you can't see the Twitter and the Instagram and all the things popping. Turn it over and you look at us. Because remember, you can't really multitask. Look at us, right? And while you're looking at us and while you're listening, active listening. So you're saying things like, come on, practice. Really? No way. That's awesome. See, that's great. So that's the kind of listening that women need from men. Am I right? We just need a little bit of the active listening. Okay, now women. The scariest words, really, for a man to hear are, we need to talk. Because he has no idea what the context could be in. So here's what would help him. Is if you gave him the general subject matter, and if you said something like, Philip, we need to, you know, have a conversation about my parents coming to stay with us for a while. Could we talk for about 15 minutes? So then he knows that there's a beginning. And thank God, there will be an end to this conversation. Just trying to help the men out. Are you happy? And generally, men, the reactions that men have to stress are very different. Men typically would isolate when they're stressed, when they're trying to process something. They isolate. They take that, you know, TV remote control, or they stand in front of a basketball hoop and just shoot it again and again, or they swing a club, whatever they're going to do. They generally isolate. Whereas women, we want to talk about it. We want to talk all about it, right? And the problem is he's trying to process it and you're taking it personally. It's not necessarily about you, honey. He's just trying to work on something, okay? And so we tend to, you know, chase him into his little isolation cave, and what he really wants is, no, just give me some time. He will come out. Just where we're different. And how we problem solve is different. You know, for most women, sharing and discussing a problem presents an opportunity to explore or strengthen or deepen the relationship with the person they're talking with. But for most men, how the problem is solved is actually not nearly as important as solving it effectively and in the best, quickest possible manner. So for us, it's always about the relationship, the connection, and men, it's, you know, just get her done, let's get this fixed. And women generally are more intuitive about the needs of other people. We see a need, you don't even have to ask it. We see it, we'll fill it. Men, you just got to ask them. You know, if you need something, you got to ask from a guy. He can't read your mind. So we had to actually navigate this part in our relationship, just learning that he's not wrong, he's just a man. Awesome. And he had to learn the same thing. And then oftentimes when you're building a marriage, you come from different backgrounds. We had very different family backgrounds. And again, I think God looks at us and goes, whoa, this is going to be fireworks right here. See, each of us have been brought up differently. We have a different way of understanding how a family would work. And a lot of the initial conflict in a marriage occurs as we bring our different backgrounds together and just to see how it fits into this new thing called a marriage that we're building. See, if your mom did things a certain way, then you think, well, that's how we should do it. Well, that could be a good thing, but not necessarily. You have to figure out what works in your family. See, maybe your mom was a stay-at-home mom who cooked dinner every night, but you marry a woman who is a doctor and she wants to be a doctor and she's going to work. So you might need to figure out how you're going to do, you know, the dinner hour a little differently. Or maybe your dad was absent or abusive and you don't want that. So then you swing the other way and you never actually set boundaries for your kids. You never discipline them. Or if your father was controlling and maybe isolated himself, it will affect your marriage. All I'm saying is be honest about the backgrounds you came in with. Your background will affect your marriage. So you have to take a look at it. Were you raised in an affectionate home? What is your worldview? How was money handled in your family? Or how was conflict resolved? You know, in my home, I was raised with two parents who are still married to this day. They love each other. I was raised with affection. I was very, very blessed to have the home. I was told, my parents told me they loved me every day. I was hugged, a lot of kissing in our family, a lot of hugging. Well, you know, in Philip's family, nobody kissed anybody really. And, you know, very broken, hurt, you know, a little bit, you know, painful situation. And so I really got a picture of this when we were dating and my parents came to visit. And this is, you know, back in the day when you could actually go to the plane to meet people. And so I went to the plane and Philip was with me and they were going to pick up my parents. And so my, you know, parents are getting off the plane. They're walking down the stairs and my, you know, dad's in the front and I'm like, Daddy! And I run and I jump in his arms and he picks me up and he twirls me around like this. And I get back around and I see Philip's face and it's like this. Right? Because he had never seen healthy affection in a family. He just had never even seen anything like that. And so I remember him telling me, I want that. You know, when we build our home, I want that. When we build our family, that's what I want. And I heard him say that. But I had to be patient as we worked that out. It's because that wasn't going to immediately be his default. And so there were times when that wouldn't have been his first instinct to grab my hand, so I had to just grab his instead, you know, till it became normal and natural for him to demonstrate affection. Or, you know, money. How was money handled in your home? And, you know, again, I was a spoiled brat person. I just went to my dad and go, Dad, can I have? And he goes, yes. And I'm telling you, spoiled princess person. And then I married Philip. And he wasn't quite going to be like that. And he told me that he said, Holly, we have to, you know, go on a budget. We have to set a budget, live our lives on a budget. Well, I cried. Because I thought that meant we were poor. He goes, no, it's so we won't be poor, honey. You're probably... will marry someone with a very different personality to you. And marriage will be so much more enjoyable when you recognize and enjoy the personality of your spouse. Because listen, there is no right personality. God has entrusted you with a personality, with certain gifts and abilities and talents, and it's so that you can live out your God calling. It's so that you can live out your purpose. And the person you marry will have a different personality than you so that the two of you are stronger. So that where one has weaknesses, the other has strengths. Where one has strengths, the other has weaknesses. That's how it is. Now, there have been studies done over hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years about the different kinds of personalities. And Hippocrates, you know, started this a long time ago. But basically, in his model, he said there are basically four kinds of personalities, four different personality types. And none of us are all one. We're a little bit of a blend of all of them. So there's the party person, the party in a bottle, fast talking, energetic, happy all the time, you know, can start anything, isn't so good at finishing stuff unless it's your sentences if you take too long, right? And so they're the life of the party. And if you're not this person, you need to know these people because they'll make your party a lot more fun. Or you need to hire some for your next party because they'll keep it moving, right? They're the energetic. You know, so strengths, a lot of energy, you know, weaknesses, they can be a little bit too many words and not necessarily finish things. And then there's the person who is the ducks in a row person. They like things decently and in order. That would be their favorite Bible verse right there. These are the ones that in their Bible, you know, the people that actually use Bibles, then they'll take a straight edge and underline in it because they wouldn't want any lines that weren't even. And, you know, these are the people that invented, you know, spell check and whiteout because they care. Like, details matter. You know, having things just so matter. These people are also the geniuses of our society. They're the deep thinkers. They're the ones that would solve problems that the rest of us, you know, couldn't. And awesome. Now, they like things perfect. And because life is rarely perfect, then they can get depressed because it's depressing for them to realize that life isn't perfect. So that's one. And then there's another personality type that's just the goal-driven. They got plans. They got 10-year goals, 5-year goals, 5-minute goals. Here we go. Go. Score. And oftentimes, these are the ones that have like a little crease right here because it's important. And their fists might be here we go. And you can usually hear them when they enter a room. It's like, you know, they're on a mission. Got a plan. And it's great. Thank God for these people, because we would all have fun and our ducks would be in a row, but we wouldn't be going anywhere. Right? So you have to have these people. They keep the vision. They keep us headed somewhere. Now, it's too bad if you're in their way, because they probably will step over you. Not really meaning to hurt you, but they're so focused on where they're headed that they're not always seeing, you know, what's in front of them here. And then there's the other personality type that would just be sweet. They're just peaceful. They're just calm. You know, these are the ones that have a lot of friends. They just don't ever rock the boat. They're just, they make great counselors because they want to listen to your story again and again and again. They're fine with that. I call these people the whatever people, because what do you want to do? Whatever you want to do. It doesn't matter. Whatever. Now, awesome. Awesome, awesome, awesome people. Amazing, amazing people. To get them to change anything requires dynamite, right? Because they like things just how they are. How they are is good. Don't be changing anything. So these are, you know, a gross overview, if you will, of those four types. Now, Philip and I, very different. You could probably tell I would be the party in a bottle, the fast-talking, confetti-throwing, make-a-mess, happy person. And Philip is the ducks in a row. He likes things just so. And I didn't even know there were ducks. I'm like kicking them over and it's a mess. And see, when we're dating, we didn't really pay any attention to that. When we're dating, I love that he showed up on time. Now, he drove a Volvo. Of course he did. Safest car on the road, right? Volvo. Now, he was wild. You know, it had like sunroof and wild man. And but I loved it. His car was always clean, and he showed up on time when he picked me up, and it was great. And he loved, you know, my energy and spontaneity. Okay, so one day in particular, I remember we were in the car, and it was nighttime, and this, for some reason, somebody, maybe we were coming back from some sort of Bible study. So somebody else is in the back seat, and I'm in the front seat. Philip's driving, and it's nighttime, and the moon is amazing. You know how that can just, when it's hanging low, it's awesome. So I'm just, oh, it's such an amazing moon. So I stand up right through the sun, and I'm like, that's so awesome. And I hear Philip tell the guy who's sitting in the back seat, isn't she great? Isn't she great? All that energy. She just sees good in everything. Right. Okay. Now, fast forward a year and a half. Okay. We are now married. Same car. Same girl. Same guy. Same sunroof. Same moon. Driving down the road, I stand up through there and go, I love the moon in Los Angeles. It's so awesome. And he starts pounding me. Get down. What is wrong with you? How could you do this? You're going to cause an accident. Now, what happened? See, it's all of a sudden what he, the difference that he didn't pay any attention to, now it became very clear that, you know, what he saw as carefree now became careless. And then I sit down and I just pouted. What's wrong with you? How could you do that? What I saw before as protective and safe became picky and annoying. Do you see how easy it is to make that shift? Okay, I'll tell you another one. Again, I spoiled princess brat person. Okay, so I've never really washed a car. And I didn't grow up in this country, to be fair. Okay, so it's our first year of marriage, and I come home. It was, Holly, we have just got to wash your car. And I go, okay, this sounds like fun, right? Fun, 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 fun. I'm the fun. So we pull in the driveway. And of course, he's ready. He's got the bucket, you know, the towels, the sponge, and exciting. And then he hands me a hose. Now, the hose has one of those little things that you squeeze on it, and then, you know, sprays out fast. And I'm thinking, this is going to be, like, so fun. So I take that hose, and I just go, I spray Phil all up and down. I just nail him. Because I thought that was, like, part of the experience. It's all about fun. Well, then he gets mad at me, like, what do you think you're doing? We're supposed to wash it. Because here, what's the thing? What was I there to do? Have fun. What was he there to do? Wash the car. Some of you who are like him are going, oh, God bless Philip. And so, of course, I stormed off, and, you know, my feelings were all hurt, and blah, 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 right? Gotta tell you one more. This is therapy for me. Our closet was a particularly interesting place to work this out. Because Philip, you know, he liked things. First of all, he liked them all in hangers. Okay, go figure. You know, he had like the light-colored shirts here, and then it would go to the long-sleeved ones. And then, you know, that he owned more suits in those days, so he had suits. And then he had the, you know, the dark-colored pants here, and then go to jeans, which, you know, of course, have creases in them. And then he had his ties on those little thingy, you know, little spinny thingy. And his shoes were on these things, you know, which I found later were actually four shoes. I thought it was for books in your closet. I thought that was weird. But anyway, so he had his shoes on there. So that's how he liked it, right? Now, see, my style of closet management was if when I kicked my shoe off, it hit the door, I called it in. Okay. So we had a few things to work out. And ha, 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 this is so funny now. But you know, it wasn't funny in the moment. Because what happened is rather than, you know, embracing the differences in each other, we began to turn on each other. And I started getting so frustrated, you know, calling him critical and picky, and he called me careless and irresponsible. So what we had loved about each other and seen as strengths initially, because we were in that brain dead euphoric state, right? Now we turn on each other and criticize each other. Quit trying to make your spouse like you. God made them how he made them to fulfill his plan through them. Quit trying to make your spouse like you. Now, we all have weaknesses that we have to be working on, so don't use that as an excuse. And at the same time, be patient with each other as you work on your weaknesses. Be patient with each other. You know, recently, Philip and I spoke at a church, and later the pastor was making some comments about both of us. And he laughingly, you know, said, "Wow, you are both so different. I'm just impressed that you stayed married." But, you know, not only have we stayed married, but we actually like each other. I have to love him. That's in the Bible. But liking is a choice. I actually like him. So all I'm saying is, no matter where you are with the differences in your marriage, you can actually push through. You can learn to not just accept, but enjoy them. And I'm encouraging you to let the differences in each other bring strength to the whole. Yep, there are differences. But perhaps what we need to focus on is where we're similar. And this is what I felt like God challenged me with. Because when I was at my most frustrated with Philip, I was so focused on where we're different, and of course he was wrong, and was so focused on that. And I just felt like God challenged me. He said, "Why don't you start to focus on where you're the same? What is it that brought you to each other?" So I wrote this list down. This is a small portion of a very long list that I wrote down. I said, well, for Philip and I, we both love God. We both love each other. We're both committed to our marriage. We both love our children. We both love building the church. We both love our friends. We both love playing with other people's babies. We both love to travel. We both love the beach. We both love to read. We both love to laugh. We both love sitting in coffee shops and watching weird people. We both like swimming in the ocean when it's warm. We both like to play in New York City. We both like living in Los Angeles. We both like to teach. We both like movies. We both like dogs. We both like Indonesian food. We both take a lot of vitamins. We're both going to love our grandchildren. We both pray for our children and their future spouses. We're both committed to our friends. We both want to make a contribution to our city and the world. We're both committed to helping the orphan. We both hate injustice against children. We're both determined to see the next generation fulfill their purpose. That's just a small portion of a very, very long list. And what I realized at the end of that is where we were the same, what drew us is actually far greater than what could ever divide us. It was far bigger than the differences. So your homework, those of you that are married, it's actually to make a list of where you're the same. What is it that unites you? What is it that you both love? Make your own list. Don't let the differences drive you from each other. Recognize the strength in each other and make a decision to focus on what unites you.
Thank you for listening to the Oasis Church podcast. To find out more about Oasis, including service times and directions, please visit our website at oasisla.org.